Well, if you're new with us, you may have noticed every once in a while some gunshots off in the distance. Nothing to be concerned about. Everything's okay. But sometimes those of us who've been here for a while, we tune them out after a while. They're there. They're just kind of in the background. Well, we've been talking, started last week, a series on a topic called spiritual warfare. And spiritual warfare is kind of like those gunshots off in the distance. Like, we learn after a little while, like, oh, that's over there, and we don't need to worry about it. But what I want us to get at in this short series is the idea that it is something we need to pay attention to. It's not just something out there. It is not something we can simply ignore. So I want to review briefly what we talked about last week. And if you want to follow along, there's a little bit of an outline in your bulletin on one of the white sheets. And the first thing that we talked about last week is this battle is real. This isn't just in our imagination, and it's not something that's just over there. It's not just something that happens in certain parts of the world, but it's something that's real, something that goes on in our life. And that battle has three fronts. Can you three boys come up here and give me a hand for a second? I spent a lot of money making some visual aids here, and so I want to make sure. You need to hold on to these carefully, okay? All right, hold that up high. All right. You're going to take that one. You're going to take that one. Hold up. All right. So we have a battle that goes on three fronts. The world, the flesh, and the devil and the demons. And these are the ways that we battle, things we battle against. And sometimes what happens, I'm going to have you guys come down here because you're going to have to do some moving around a little bit. Sometimes what happens, I'm going to stand there. Nope, you're going to go right here. You're going to come over here. You're going to go right behind him. Sometimes we think it's all this one. It's all the world. Sometimes we think it's just about our flesh. That it, and flesh means just the sinful desires inside of us. And sometimes we think it's all this one. It's all the devil. That the devil's the problem behind everything. But really, hang on to it. Don't let go. It's kind of a mix of all three of those things. They kind of all intersect together. And so there's the world, which is kind of the culture, the things around us that encourage things. There's the flesh, which is our desires inside of us. And there's the devil. And all three of these things are part of the battle. All right, good job, guys. Give me a hand. If anyone wants to purchase these, I have these available for $9.99. If you act now. But the reality is we have this spiritual battle, and it happens on those three fronts, the world, the flesh, and the devil. And the thing is with the spiritual battle, we don't always know which one is which. And this is one of the things I want us to get at in the midst of this series is sometimes we want to try and understand everything. That's the nature of things. We want to try and figure it all out and have all the right answers and stuff. And sometimes we just don't know. We sometimes just don't know which it is. But we realize that sometimes it's the world. Sometimes it's just culture that's going on and is filling us with information. Sometimes it's just what's happening inside of us. Sometimes we can't blame anyone else. We can't look and say, well, it was culture's fault, I learned that, and it wasn't the devil's fault. Sometimes it's just us. That we have stuff that comes from inside of us and we do wrong things. And sometimes the devil and his minions are involved with it. And so rather than trying to figure out, well, where does it all come from, we just realize it does and it happens. So that's this three-front battle. Third thing we want to remember is the battle's won. And so we saw that in Colossians chapter 2, that Jesus has disarmed the principalities and powers. We're fighting against a defeated enemy. So sometimes we think, well, I've got to fight and I've got to win. We're claiming victory. And we're battling that way. And it's kind of like there's kind of this guerrilla warfare going on. They've been defeated, but they're kind of continuing fighting against us. But we're fighting a defeated foe. Last thing, kind of quick review, is maintain a balanced view. In other words, don't ignore it, but don't think too much about it. Remember the reality of what we face. And so instead of saying, well, it's the devil everywhere or there's no devil, we maintain the balance between those two. And when we think about it, and this is an interesting thing as I was reading, throughout history, the church has developed these various doctrinal statements. There's these called confessionals. And sometimes if you've been part of particular church traditions, you have a confession. There's a Westminster confession. There's an Augsburg confession. There's a Heidelberg confession. There's all these different things. Big, long doctrinal statements. If you read through most of those, it says almost nothing about the devil. Not a whole lot there. And part of it is just they didn't think about it so much. But one of it is to say our focus shouldn't be on the devil so much, but on who God is. And when we think about this, when we talk about this topic, it shouldn't lead to a feeling of fear. So if you walk away today afraid, come talk to me because I did something wrong. Should not be afraid, but what you should be is more dependent on who God is and what he's done. All right, so that's a quick review of last week. But now we're going to talk about our enemy. Know your enemy. And so when I was in the military and went to school and learned about things, one of the things was we studied how the enemy fights. Back then we were worried about Russia and fighting the big Soviet Union. And so we learned about their tactics and then we studied their tactics. Why? Because if you're going into a battle, you want to know how the enemy's going to fight. How is it they fight? And so we want to learn that. And so we want to learn how do devils and the devil and demons fight? What do they do? And so we want to know them and so how they fight. So what is the devil and the demons? And so devil and demons. So various terms. So the devil, we could call him the devil, the evil one, the god of this world, the tempter, the serpent, old scratch. Anybody got any other names they've ever heard for the devil?
Beelzebub,
you know, there's all these different terms out there. And demons are sometimes referred to as rulers, principalities and powers, authorities, cosmic powers, spiritual forces, elemental spirits of the universe, all these different languages. So that's who we're talking about. All those different terms, that's the enemy. So, next question is, why should I believe in these things? Because I said so? No. I believe in these things mainly because Jesus said so. Jesus believed in those things, so for me, that's a good enough reason to believe. And some people have had experiences with demonic. I've not personally experienced it. I've read numerous stories about it and heard people talk about it. I've not actually seen it myself, but I believe it's real. And what's interesting is there are secular sociologists, anthropologists, people who are studying other cultures who would normally say, oh, that's just their culture, they're making things up, and stuff, who are coming around to start to believe that the supernatural is a real thing. They're going to countries and they're studying. They're saying, well, we don't understand. They're talking about this. And cultural anthropologists and sociologists, people who have no belief in the supernatural, no belief in the spiritual, are witnessing things that they cannot explain. And so they're starting to say, there must be something out there. There must be something and it's real. For me, Jesus believed in it. And so for this one time, I'm going to say, well, Jesus believed it. I'm going to believe it. So we ask ourselves, where does this enemy come from? And here's what I say. The Bible doesn't really tell us. And so there's kind of this fog of war. And this is where I get at this whole idea is sometimes we are asking a lot more questions that the Bible doesn't answer. One thing we can say is they are created. So Colossians chapter 1, verse 16 says, in him, in Jesus, all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. So in other words, these demons, the devil, whatever we want to call them, are created beings. They haven't always existed. So in some cultures, in some religions, there's this ongoing eternal war between the forces of good and the forces of darkness. They've always existed and there's always been the battle. In the Christian worldview, that's not the case. God has always existed, has always been, and the forces of evil were created. Now, were they created evil? No, I don't think so. How did they get that way? Another good question. I don't know. See, this will be one of my standard phrases through a lot of this sermon today. Is, I don't know. Which makes you probably sit there wondering, why are we listening to that guy if he doesn't know, right? Because I don't know, because the Bible doesn't tell us why. Now, there's a lot of speculation, a lot of ideas that we can come up with, but one of the things we say here is this is our authority. This is where we're teaching. And so this is where we go. And so if I don't see it in here, it might be a good idea. It might be possible, but I can't say for sure. But I can say that these are created beings. So my next line, it says, demons may be fallen angels. And so if you were to look at Jude 6 or 2 Peter chapter 4, and so I wrote the verses there so you don't have to flip through your Bible and follow all those and I'm going to go through some of them pretty fast, is they may be fallen angels, or maybe they're not. I don't know. See, there's that phrase again. I don't know. We do know that they have power. In some cases, they seem to be fallen angels. Maybe they came from somewhere else. Some people think, if you read Genesis 6, there's a story of these Nephilim, these things, and these giant, these heroes of old and sons and women, that maybe that's where demons came from. The important thing isn't where they came from. You can speculate a lot, you can guess a lot. The important thing isn't so much where they came from, but that they are real and that we're fighting a battle against them. Satan, the same way. It's like, well, how did Satan become so evil and what happened? And so I listed two passages there, Isaiah chapter 14, Ezekiel chapter 28. And some people say, oh, those two passages explain where Satan came from. And why, you know, how he fell into sin. I don't think so. We're not going to go there now. But what I would encourage you to do is go home, if you're interested, and read those two passages. Isaiah 14, Ezekiel 28. And read and see what they say. One describes Sennacherib, the king of Assyria. One describes the king of Tyre. You think, oh, well, that's about Satan because it talks about Garden of Eden and falling from grace. If you read them carefully, they're both talking about real human beings. Now, is it possible that they're somehow alluding to something that happened with Satan? Yes, that's possible. But they are not the origin of Satan. They are not the stories about it. Because if you simply read through those two passages, you realize they're talking about human beings. They're using that language. And so, what's my point here? Is that we don't know all these things, but that's not the things we need to be focusing on. We can't always recognize them because 2 Corinthians 11 talks about Satan comes as an angel of light. And so here's what I'm getting at, partly is to say, sometimes what we want to do is we want to understand everything. We want to say, well, where did they come from? How did they, what are they doing? And what I want us to get behind, in our heads, in our hearts, is this idea of a warfare worldview. Is to recognize there is a war and we're involved in it. And so rather than a theology of understanding, it's a theology of revolt, is what one author describes it as. Is to say, here's this war going on. And so I want you to imagine that you're in a car and you're on this winding mountain road and all of a sudden you realize that your brakes aren't working. Now, at that moment in time, you could be thinking about, I wonder maybe if my brake line rusted out. Maybe somebody cut it. I wonder if when that guy fixed it, if he forgot to add the brake fluid. Is that really what matters at that moment in time?
You can get out alive.
What matters is, my brakes aren't working. And you need to do it. In the middle of a war, no soldier out in the battlefield is wondering, saying, wonder why we started this thing. You know, those politicians, I think it was this, you're in the middle of a war. And it's the same way with our spiritual warfare. We can spend a lot of time thinking, well, how did this start? Where did they come from? What are these devils? And I don't understand. Are they big? Are they small? Are they red? Are they green? Are they yellow? What do they look like? You know, do they act this way? Are there ones that over certain territories? But it doesn't matter. What matters is there's a war. There's a battle. And so what we need to have is, I said that Greg Boyd, I like what he said, he's is a theology of revolt. What we need to have is a warfare worldview, something that says there is a war and it's going on and we're in the middle of it, we're fighting it. And that's what matters. Feel free to go sit on the beach and ponder where devils came from. I wouldn't recommend it. That's not what I want to do when I'm sitting on the beach. But you're welcome to sit and try and figure out. But what we realize is the Bible doesn't explain all those things to us. Sometimes people describe the Bible as an answer book. And I said, the thing is, the Bible only answers what the Bible wants to answer. The Bible only answers and tells us what God wants us to know. The Bible doesn't always tell us all the things that we want to know. So, in the end, what we want to have is a nuanced and complex view of demons and say they're out there and they're fighting us. And so, a couple things we can say about it. So, the enemy tactics. One is the enemy is opposed to the will of God. So there's a story in Matthew chapter 16, fascinating story where Jesus is talking about, he's getting ready to go to the cross, and one of his followers, Peter, says, no, not you, Lord. And Jesus says to Peter, get behind me, Satan. Now, does Jesus think that Peter's really Satan? Why does Jesus call him Satan? Because he is opposing what Jesus is going to do. He's going against Jesus and the cross. And so in some sense, we can think of anything that's opposed to the will of God is somehow connected to Satan. But we think about it, and so as I was reading, I was doing some various research and saying, okay, well, how can we learn about, where do we learn about these things? And I came across a book written really long time ago, or mid-1600s, by a man named Thomas Brooks. And the title of the book is Precious Remedies Against Satan's Devices. This was in the days of the Puritans. And how many of you heard of Puritans? Okay. If you've never heard of Puritans, what do you think they were all about? Being pure, right? Okay, so they had an obsession with sin. They had an obsession with not doing the wrong thing. So they thought a lot about these things. And so in this same time period, there was also a book written by a man named John Milton called Paradise Lost, which was all about this whole, like, where did Satan come from and all that. But Thomas Brooks writes about how Satan works, because they would write these long, this book is probably 150 pages long, and it's all about this thing. Here's the way the devil works. And then what do we do against it? So if you're ever curious, this is a great read. So you can find it probably online for free, maybe 99 cents on your Kindle. Precious Remedies Against Satan's Devices. I'm not going to give you everything that Thomas Brooks said, but I want us to think about one or two of those. And one is the main thing, the main technique that Satan, the demons, the devils used to fight against us is deception. Is deception. They deceive us about the nature of Christ. You see that? There's a couple passages. Deceive us about the nature of Jesus. 2 Corinthians chapter 10, 1 Timothy 4. And so Satan and the demons sometimes want us to get an idea. So that's where we go back to Peter. Peter had this idea that Jesus didn't need to die for us. That surely a Savior wouldn't go to the cross. And so Jesus looks at Peter and says, "You're Satan. You're opposing. This is not what I'm like." And this has been one of the challenges in the churches. What is Jesus like? Is he a man? Is he God? Which one is he? Or is he both? And so one of the things that demons and Satan do is they want to deceive us about the nature of who Jesus is. And then there's two other deceptions. I want to spend a little bit more time on those. One is Satan deceives us about ourselves. Satan is the accuser. And so one way he does that is he causes us to have too low a view of ourself. He brings doubt and fear and guilt. So what do I mean by that? Too low of a view of ourself. He begins to make us think, wow, I'm really a bad person, aren't I? I can't believe the horrible things I've done. I can't believe that I'm doing these things. And we begin to be overwhelmed by doubt and fear and guilt. See, that's spiritual warfare going on. Sometimes we think of it as like, oh, it's these giant demons and they're creating fire pits and sucking people down and stuff. Spiritual warfare is much more subtle than that. Spiritual warfare isn't always these big battles going on. Sometimes it's a battle. A lot of times it's a battle just going on inside our head. It's a battle that causes us to look at our sin and not at our Savior. Well, it says, okay, wow, I wonder if God can really love me. Wonder if I'm that way. You know, I've been thinking and I've been starting to wonder. And so it's this low view of ourself and what we're like. And starting to realize like, oh, I'm not sure if God could love me. I'm not sure if what this is like. And so this is one of those temptations. One of those ways that Satan deceives us to say, here's this low view of who you are. You're not really that good a person. God doesn't really care about you. God doesn't really love you for who you are. And so it's this temptation to see this low view. The other temptation is the flip side, is to have too high view of yourself, to lure you away from God. And so this was the original temptation. To say, well, you know, you really don't need God. You really don't need all these things. And so maybe we look and so one of the ones that Thomas Brooks talks about is this idea where we begin to turn sin, we begin to justify our sin. This is where we have this high view of ourselves. And so you begin to say, Well, I'm not greedy, I'm just thrifty. Right? And we take things that are, and we begin to make them sound good. And so we begin to say, oh, I'm not selfish, I'm just caring for who I am. And so the temptation is to begin to deceive ourselves, saying, oh, I'm not a sinful person, I'm not really a bad person. Look at that guy. Look at how bad he is. I mean, think of it, that's Satan in some sense at work. When you look and you say, well, I'm really not so bad. Look at these guys. I mean, it's tempting as a pastor. I read about, unfortunately, we read far too many stories, what pastors who get themselves in trouble, right? Yeah. Who do things that are foolish and get caught in front of things. And so I can say, well, I'm a pretty good pastor. I'm not like these guys. That's a temptation. That's a deception. It's to begin to say, well, look, I really have a pretty good view of myself. I know what I'm like. And so here's these deceits that are going on. Here's these challenges. And so this is one of the primary enemy tactics. This is one of the primary ways that Satan begins to trick and to deceive us, is to make us have too low a view of self or too high a view of ourself. And so I want us to think about, you know, when you're deceived, it's like, okay, so if that's the case, and so in a couple weeks we're going to talk about how we fight this, but what's one of the key ways then that we can fight against this? If deception is one of the enemy's primary tactics, and I would say primary tactic, if deception is one of the primary tactics, how do you fight against deception?
Truth.
Right. Know the truth, right? And so how can we know the truth? We can read our Bible, right? We can spend time with God and know the truth. We can see what God says about us. So we can look and we can read in Romans chapter 6 where it says, there is therefore now no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus, right? And so when we're beginning to have that low feeling to say, well, you know, I don't know. I think God's got it in for me. We can go to Romans chapter 6 and say, well, no, there's therefore no condemnation. Or you can turn to 1 John if you're kind of on the other side. And 1 John where it says, you know, if you believe you are without sin, you're deceived, right? So when we start to begin thinking, it's like, hey, I'm a pretty good person. You know, I went through this whole week. I haven't done anything wrong. In fact, I went through last month and I haven't done anything wrong. You know, in fact, thinking back in the whole year, I've had a really good year. And so we can look and we can say, no, you're being deceived. Now, how does Satan do that? I don't know. I mean, I don't think he leaves post-it notes on my mirror saying, you're really a good guy, Carl. You know, it's thoughts, it's processes, it's all kinds of things. It's all those other things. It's the world, it's the culture around us, Satan, and the principalities and powers working in the marketing campaigns. It's Satan working through the governments of the world. It's Satan working in our heart. It's Satan introducing ideas. But it's not so important to know the how. It's not so important to figure out, like, how did Satan trick me into doing that? But what's important is recognize he does trick us. He does fool us. There is deception, and that's one of the primary things. And so we need to arm ourselves with the truth and be prepared to fight against that, to deal with that. And so that's why, in the end, there's a phrase that we use in, or the phrase used to describe military, it's called the fog of war. You know, it's like, sometimes you really don't know what's going on. If you've watched some of the war movies ever, you watch the ones that are really good and you just see chaos. You see smoke and you see, you know, hear explosions and stuff, and there's just people kind of running. There's chaos everywhere and everybody's running around and they don't really know what's going on. That's the fog of war. And that's why I say again, it's how it works is not so important. I think we can get so caught up in trying to figure this out. We can get so caught up in, and how does this work? And where did Satan come from? Where do the demons come from? And what size are they? And how they work? That's not the important part of it. The important part is they're real and they're fighting against you, and we need to be prepared for it. And we can't ignore it. Greg Boyd, in one of his books, he gave this great illustration. He said, imagine that you are a family on vacation, and you're back in 1944. And you rent this nice little beach house. on the beach of Normandy on June 5th, 1944.
Oh, jeez.
And you show up and you're on vacation and you're sitting there in your little house. You're like, wow, this is such a nice place. And then the morning of June 6th, 1944, you wake up in the morning. And for those of you, a little short, long time since your history class, June 6th is D-Day, when the Allies invade the Normandy beach. And so June 6th, you wake up in the morning and there's these explosions going on in the air. And suddenly you discover these American and soldiers knocking at your door and they're saying, you need to get out, there's a war going on. And you say, but we're on vacation.
So?
And they say, no, you don't understand. There's an invasion, there's this battle going on, and we need you moving. And you say, no, I rented this house for a week. You're
so?
Staying here. Sometimes that's what it's like for us as Christians. We think, we're in our little vacation house. And someone comes knocking on the door and says, there's a war going on. You say, no. And you want to shut the door and pretend it's not. And if we get nothing else from this sermon series, what I want you to get is that there is a war and it's really going on and you can't ignore it. You can't just pretend and say sorry and shut the door on your little cottage and say, no, I'm going to plug my ears and say there's nothing happening out there. We can't pretend there's not a war going on. It's a war, it's real, but in the end, the key thing beyond the war being real is, remember, is they are defeated. That the power, they have no power over us unless we give it to them. And so we sang a song earlier. Anybody remember any of the songs we sang? After Our God, we sang one called Stronger. Stronger than what?
Sin.
Stronger than sin. Stronger than anything, right? Stronger. So God is stronger. So if you have a battle and you have one who's stronger and one who's not, which one do you want? Whose side do you want to be on?
The victor.
The victor, right? And so when we're going into battle, we realize that God is. And we sang another one. You know, our God is the Lion of Judah. He's roaring with power and fighting our battles, and every knee will bow before Him. Does it say one, some knees will bow before Him?
All knees.
Every knee will bow before Him. Or we looked at this passage in last week, if you were here, in Colossians chapter 1. It says, for in Him all things were created, and He's before things, and in Him all things hold together. And it says, so that He might have the supremacy. And so it talks about God being over all things. We can see the same thing in the book of Ephesians where it talks about the same thing, where God is greater or over all things. And so when we fight this battle, don't walk away with a spirit of fear. Walk away with a spirit that says, there is a war going on and I am involved in it. Have a theology of revolt. Have a warfare worldview that says there is a war going on. But whose side is the winning side? God's side. Which side is defeated? Satan and all his demons. And so remember that. Remember that he's defeated. And so don't have a theology that leads to fear. Have a theology that says you fight, but not a theology of fear. There's a battle going on. There's a fight we need to be involved in. And there will be deceptions of, well, God is the one who brings truth and God is the victor. And so trust in Him. Don't be afraid, but realize there's a battle going on, and we're all a part of it.